Valentine found the funny-looking man in question at the village well, drinking. Cercato was short of stature, pot-bellied, and naked from the waist up and knees down. Tangled hair covered his head, shoulders, and even something of his face. He was a road watcher, the one with the most extensive network in central Hispaniola.
Good news?
He had learned in previous conversations with the road watcher that most items in his brain were categorized as either good news or bad news. This valley was bad news, for there were troops under an active officer. Another mountainside was good news, because there were strawberries to eat and many honeycombs.
Good news! The soldiers in the garrisons think they are going to be attacked along the mountain roads. They've sent out many patrols where the Haitians have gathered. We could take elephants over the mountains and it would not be known for days.
How about food reserves?
There could be much more if you could let me go outside my personal network. And this business about putting caches everywhere, both north and south of the peaks, much of the effort will go to waste.
Tell them if it's not eaten in 4 days, they may have it back. We could be forced to turn aside or even back, and I want that food available. Also, just in case word does get out and they find some of them, they might guess wrong about where we're going because of the supplies.
Valentine missed his days on the Thunderbolt. Being on a ship eliminated many of the problems of food and drinking water, thanks to her available tonnage of stores. He was back to the days of commanding wolves in the mountains, constantly worrying about how and where he would feed his men.
You've done all that I asked and more. Take a meal and sleep while you can. We'll be setting off this afternoon.
I can sleep while walking. I shall find you on the south slope of the Nalga de Marco tonight. If you hear a hollow log drumming, that means bad news. Turn back.
Yes, I remember.
But you will hear no drums, I'm sure. Our friends will cause too much trouble for that.
The column was already ascending the mountainside when they heard the shots. Some trick of acoustics among the clouds and hills brought the faint popping sound of small arms fire and deeper explosions from the garrison to the south, where Bayen was making as much noise as possible. His feint against the garrison guarding one of the valley passages into Santo Domingo was crucial to drawing away whatever patrols might be out north of the garrison. The raiding column moved with Anka and his grods in the vanguard. Valentine hoped their unexpected presence would frighten or at least confuse any patrols they ran into. The heavier weapons, along with the sailors and marines of the Thunderbolt, followed behind, with Post in charge of making sure the main body did not lose contact with the Grogs. The Haitians were next with the pack horses, accompanied by a mounted force of Monte Cristi's men watching the front, flanks, and rear. Valentine, astride a Haitian roan with a white blaze across its face, walked the animal along the marching column of Monte Cristi's men. A runner from the forward column sought him out.
Bad news, sir. The forward van ran into a patrol. They shot at each other. No one was hurt.
So the Santo Domingans were no fools. Valentine had hoped their forces would pull in around the garrisons, fearing an all-out assault. Instead, they were probing. Hoofbeats behind announced the arrival of Monte Cristi.
We're found out already. The screening patrol Bayen sent out missed them.
Do we turn back?
Valentine fought the urge to swear.
They're your men, no matter what we decided about the command. The risk is greater now, but I say no. I won't make it an order, however. We can go with less. Detach a good number of men, 50 or 60, under a capable officer. Have them chase that patrol south and make it look like we're a flanking maneuver to cut off the garrison's road. If they do cut it, so much the better.
And if they meet greater numbers in turn?
Then they run like hell for Bayen or anywhere else they think is safe. I want the Santo Domingans to do the bleeding, not us.
Agreed. Papa Legba said you were a man to be followed. Despite your years, we go on.
After a brief halt that allowed Monte Cristi to organize the detachment, they got underway again. The column trudged steadily and slowly uphill. The sun vanished in a crimson explosion, then turned the sky over to the stars. With the night complicating matters, Post called frequent halts to allow the column to keep in a compact bunch. At every stop, the men ate some of their rations meant to last for 2 days, but Valentine left that to Monte Cristi. He had been warned that the men preferred to carry their food in their stomachs instead of in their bags. Cercato appeared out of the dark, with two skinny youths he introduced as nephews. The boys did not take after their uncle in grooming. Their scalps were shorn like merinos in springtime.
We had some trouble near the border. A patrol.
I am sorry, Captain. Always in war is bad news. Always.
You just summed up war almost as concisely as Sherman, Road Watcher.
We're pressing on. You've got more of your family spread out up the mountain and then down to San Jose.
Yes.
How many are there?
Were it not for the accursed ones, there would be 67 or more. My father had 5 sons and 3 daughters, and I am the 2nd oldest. My father and my elder brother both died. Every year more died than are born. There are 29 of us now. In 10 years' time, the family of Sicardo will cease to be, unless some of the infants survive. They hunt us up and down the mountains, and sometimes they find us.
Why do you keep on?
Why do you?
Valentine nodded at the feral-looking man, for a moment feeling an affinity for him stronger than his battle-tested friendship with Post.
I understand. I'm the last of my family.
You are still young. Find a wife, have children, go far from them. There are other ways to beat them than killing.
My father tried that. I'm still the last.
I see. So, you stick to killing.
It was a statement, not a question. Valentine looked back at the men.
How long until we can rest?
At the rate you go, a few more hours. Say 5 at most. Then you will be safe among the heights.
They reached the heights, grassy meadows on the rounded tops of the mountains that reminded Valentine of some of the weather-rounded peaks of the Washitas. They had come up far, far higher than the mountain that held the Onceler Citadel. It was cool, even for Haiti in June at this elevation. Valentine walked his horse backwards down the column. He nodded at Monte Cristi.
We'll rest until dawn.
Valentine couldn't rest. There was Post to see, and Ankah. The Grogs were already sleeping in a heap of limbs and broad backs, like pigs seeking the comfort of each other's warmth in a cold sty.
Rest, my David. I will keep watch.
I'll join you. I could sleep in the saddle tomorrow.
You are limping. You always do when you are tired. Stop pretending you're a ghost and rest.
Ankah's rubbery lips came to a point like an accusing finger.
Wake me in 2 hours. Then you can sleep. 2 hours, old horse, and that's all.
Agreed.
Valentine unsaddled his mount and wiped the sweat from its back and muzzle. By the time he hobbled it, gave it a nose bag full of vegetables ground with sugar, and checked its hooves, half an hour of his 2 was gone. He looked at Ankah, standing atop a rock with the patience of a tree, as if the rock itself would succumb to fatigue before the Golden One would. Comforted, he slept beneath the statue-like shape.
Bob, you've been asleep 2 hours.
Ankah prodded Valentine in the back with one of his crossbow bolts. Valentine snatched the bolt and wrapped Ankah on the shin with it before the Golden One could react.
Thanks.
Ankah responded with a playful swipe of his long-toed foot that Valentine ducked under even as he rose. There was a hint of something in the air, the early purple of the pre-dawn. He realized he was chilled.
You lie down. My blanket's warm.
Ankah wrapped what he could of himself in the blanket.
Thank you, my David. That scout,
Cercado.
Cercado kept awake. He moves well. I've never seen a man who can vanish among the rocks like that. Only you are more silent. But he hides even his shadow in his pocket.
Speaking of silence...
Ankah closed his eyes. Valentine watched the mists revealed by the dawn, admiring the craftsmanship of the crossbow quarrel while waiting out the light. Quarrel had chiseled ridges running down the shaft, creating an artful air-guiding line from tip to flange. The Grogs put artistry into everything they made, even something meant to be fired once into an enemy. The pink and blue of first light revealed his column isolated as though on the shores of an island, surrounded by a calm gray sea of fog. Everything was reduced at this height. The trees, grasses, and flowers were all smaller, as if imitating the foreshortened landscape below. He woke Monte Cristi, who in turn woke his other chieftains. The soldiers gathered at a spring Cercado pointed out. Their guide's discovery was hardly more than a seep, but the men lined up as though it were a tiled bath. Valentine wished for a moment he were one of them, joking as they waited for a wash-up. His thoughts drifted back, as they did with unsettling frequency, through the months of Quisling service on the Gulf Coast. Ordinary soldiers weren't asked to put on the uniform of their bitterest enemy, salute men they despised, organize more thorough sweeps of coastal inlands and bays to capture auras for the insatiable Kurians. At the time, Valentine told himself, told Duvalier, that he just followed orders, didn't kill anyone himself unless they were shooting at him, usually in defense of their families. Maybe Duvalier believed him. Trouble lay in that he couldn't convince himself. He could still hear the squalling of terrified children as his men shoved them and their mothers into pens, ready to be shipped.
The mists are a stroke of fortune.
Cercado spoke from somewhere on the other side of the world.
If we move now, we can be back among the Twees before they clear, and it is downhill from here.
Valentine boxed up his terrible memories. For now.
Good. We'll get off this ridge while it lasts.
He endured a series of vexing delays while the men took up their arms and equipment. Only the pack horses were ready, happily cropping mouthfuls of mountain grass. Post came up the slope from the head of the column as Valentine mounted his horse.
There's trouble with the grogs.
Valentine rode off the ridge and came upon Anka, arguing with his scouts. The Golden One used a combination of barks and gestures to encourage his reluctant charges.
What's the matter?
Anka's ears were up and pointed forward.
Fools! They take the mists for poisoned air. They remember their grandfather's tales of chemical weapons of 50 years ago, and they're frightened of descending into the fog.
Post, keep the column moving. Don't worry about the grogs for now.
Valentine used the quarrel to tap the horse's flank. It trotted down the grassy slope toward the fog.
I'll ride in and come out alive. Tell them I breathe just as they do.
The mist closed in around him. The sun winked white on the horizon. When he replayed the incident in his mind later, Valentine rebuked himself for forgetting everything old Everready had taught him about moving alone, his first year as a wolf. He had failed to lower his life sign, and his anger at the delays kept his senses from knowing the Reaper was near until it leapt out of the mist. It wanted him as a prisoner, not as a corpse, for it killed the horse with a kick that caved in the roan's skull. Valentine fell beneath the lifeless horse. The Reaper landed on its feet beside Valentine with feline poise. Valentine reached for his holster, but the Reaper was faster. It planted a foot on him and knocked away his automatic. His arm went numb. The Reaper reached behind him and removed his machete from its sheath across his back. Pinned as he was, he could no more grasp the machine gun strapped across his saddlebags than he could the mountaintop. The Reaper's long-fingered hand closed over his face. Fingernails like steel talons dug into his cheek. The Reaper dragged him out from under the horse by his head, its baleful yellow eyes staring into his from an unkempt tangle of thin black hair. Its mouth was open in a theater-masked grin, revealing pointed black teeth. It looked upslope at some motion Valentine caught out of the corner of his eye, and pulled its captive to its chest, putting the other arm under his knees, like a muscular hero taking up his lover. In pulling him free, the Reaper released Valentine's trapped hand holding the quarrel. The Reaper turned to run. Valentine gripped the wood near the point and struck the Reaper in the pit of its stomach. The Reaper staggered, gripping him so tightly to its chest, he thought his back would break. Valentine could not draw breath.
Christ!
Suddenly, Post was in front of them, one of his pikes barring the way. Valentine looked up at the Reaper's face. Its mouth yawned open in a terrible grimace, fighting some inner seizure. It dropped him and sank to its knees. Valentine rolled downhill. Vision wavering from pain and dizziness, he looked up at the Reaper. Its eyes rolled up into its skull.
What?
Post stood frozen, staring at the thing in astonishment. Anka appeared in the mists, his crossbow cocked and ready. The grog circled the Reaper and saw the bolt protruding from the stomach, the wood swollen where it touched the Avatar's flesh. Anka came to Valentine's side, keeping the weapon ready, but his attention on Valentine.
My David, you are hurt?
Valentine shook his head, cradling his right arm.
Not seriously.
I think my hand, or my arm, is banged up good.
What he wanted to say was that it stung like a son of a bitch. But Ankh never complained of discomfort, so why should he?
I heard your horse fall and feared for you. I readied a crossbow, for only one of those would get the better of you, and came. Post, too.
Stupid.
Valentine flexed his fingers.
For leaving the column?
No, stupid of me. My apologies, my friend. I put us in danger because I wasn't thinking.
There can be no apologies between us. Come, let us see how this quickwood kills.
The grog pulled him to his feet with burly ease. They walked up the hill, Valentine feeling like a Sioux version of Richard III, limping along, horseless and with paralyzed fingers. The head of the column appeared out of the mists, grogs among the Haitians with weapons at the ready. Valentine inspected the dead reaper. Propped up on its knees, it seemed to be howling at the waxing sun rising from the Santo Domingo Mountains.
Tell your great friend that he hit it square. A good shot, near enough to the heart to kill it in a few seconds.
No, that was me. I barely stabbed it. And the wood went in an inch or two at most. That thing has muscle like armor plating.
Valentine thought back on those few seconds, which seemed, to his pained remembrance, to be hours at least, and looked into the empty yellow eyes of the Reaper. He tried to imagine what it would feel like, having the heart harden into a solid mass. Did the Kurian at the other end feel the pain as well? He found himself hoping so, before shrinking back from the sadistic speculations. The men would waste the whole morning admiring the dead Reaper if he didn't move them along.
Post, let's tighten the column up in this mist. Ankh, you and your grogs get a break for a while. Take a place at the rear.
As the various groups got themselves organized in four different tongues, counting grog speech as a language, Valentine retrieved his weapons and saddlebags. Monte Cristi offered him his horse, but he declined. Penance for his foolishness would be being on foot for the rest of the long journey. A pair of Haitian pioneers retrieved the saddle and added it to the pack animal's burdens. The grogs looked at him, sniffing and pointing at the still warm cadaver and muttering to each other. One licked its chops. Ankh growled something, and they turned abjectly away.
Oh, belay that. They can dress and quarter it as long as they do it quickly, but they have to share it with any of the men who want a piece of horse meat.
Valentine squatted in the hills, looking down at the armory, which in turn stood in the hills above the dilapidated town of San Juan. Behind him, the serration crowned by Pico Duarte purpled the dawn's horizon. His column had covered close to 50 mountainous miles in 3 nights and 2 days, and had once again been reduced when he detached Post to cut the valley road leading northwest out of San Juan to the garrison on Haiti's border. What was left of his command was hardly larger than the garrison inside the armory, if Sturcato's estimation was to be believed. Their march had been uncontested, if not uneventful, as they descended from the high mountains, following paths staked out by Sturcato and his family, until they ran into a trio of Santo Domingan soldiers on patrol. Monte Cristi's horsemen had finally run the scouts to earth this morning, and the hunt ended tragically with the shooting of all 3 scouts when they came to bay among some rocks. Valentine seethed at the loss of vital information, even as he congratulated Monte Cristi's men for their coup. Valentine examined the armory from higher ground. It was built more to withstand thievery than assault, though inside a perimeter fence of barbed wire, the buildings were linked by a series of walls and wooden towers. The whole edifice had the slapped-together look endemic to the Kurian zone.
The defenses are strongest to the town side. If we can get through the wire before they know we are here.
See all the dog kennels? They'd start barking while we were still 50 feet outside the wire.
So we turn around?
The temptation was strong. He'd seen the quickwood work, up close and far sooner than he'd expected. Valentine had no desire to burn the lives of Monte Cristi's soldiers, who had come so far so fast without letting fatigue wear down their spirits. But Valentine couldn't take all the quickwood he could carry and then leave Hispaniola no better off than the day he arrived. There was more than duty and orders at stake. If the routes accomplished something to make the march worthwhile, won a victory, it might bring more numbers to their cause. A successful raid that didn't involve being ignominiously chased back across the border would hearten the routes as much as it would dismay the Santo Domingan Kurians. But it had to start somewhere.
No, we can't blow them out of there. And I can't ask your men for an assault. We'll have to do it another way.
I cannot imagine how.
With parley.
An hour later, Valentine, Anka, and Cercado walked out of the hills to the wire, a white flag in Anka's hands. Again and again, Valentine blew a small officer's whistle, drawing attention to their movements. Behind them, Monte Cristi's men and the grogs flitted from tree to tree, appearing in as many places as possible. They appeared at the tops of rises, then sank into the long grass to show themselves again behind a tree. Even the bodies of the three Santo Domingan scouts were impressed into the action. They manned a wooden machine gun from the crotch of a branch while leaning behind a tree. Anka's grogs called to each other from a wide semicircle around the armory. The multicolored flag of Santo Domingo hung from the flagpole, its white cross visible now and then as the breeze took it. A small house stood before the flag. From it, an officer with a braided hat emerged and observed them. Calling a few men around him, the officer strode up to the wire fence, looking toward his towers to see that he was properly covered. As he approached, hand on the pistol at his hip, Valentine took the safety off his drum-fed submachine gun.
Translate for me, would you, Cercado? My Spanish may not be up to this.
Cercado nodded.
What is it? Who are you, men?
We represent the free forces of Hispaniola.
Each time he spoke, Valentine waited a moment as Cercado translated, then continued.
We do not come to fight, but to find friends among those who would oppose Kerr. Much of Haiti stands free of their menace, and we look to our brothers on this side of the island to join.
Your men, they have been beaten in battle at the border. You are misguided. It would be best if you surrender to me, not the other way around.
Do your generals always tell the truth? We give you an hour to decide. You don't have to join us. Just leave us this place intact, and you may go in peace. Though we would prefer for you and your men to join the movement, which will see Hispaniola rid of them.
Thank you for your terms. Here are mine. I will take your heads, or you will take mine. San Juan have many men, and others will come and drive you out of these mountains. The garrisons at the border still stand. 2 days ago, they asked for more ammunition.
Have you heard from the garrison since then, my friend? And was the ammunition delivered? Or did it fall into our hands?
The officer pursed his lips, but to his credit, he did not look doubtful.
We shall use the hour given to make ready for you. Come at your peril. If I were you, I would leave. Remember what I said about your heads.
Cercado did not wait for Valentine's answer.
You can be sure of it.
Valentine had his group back up, still facing the fort, and the officer did likewise. His men said something even Valentine's ears could not catch, but their tones were anxious. Valentine returned to the shadow of a battle line. He would be reluctant to attack the alerted garrison, even if he had the men he was trying to feign that he had. Was the officer bluffing as much as he? He paced for a moment or two as Anka stared down at the armory.
If they are expecting battle, there is not much sign of it. I've seen the same men go in and out of the center building 3 times.
They may have sent some of his men to the forward garrisons.
Perhaps they need another push.
He said he'd come for our heads, I believe. Give him a push. Good idea, old horse. I think I know how to do it. Come with me.
He climbed up the grassy slope, crunching through straw-like growth burnt by the dry season's sun.
Come on, boys. Let's go. Along. Keep it going.
Monte Cristi was at the edge of a steep ravine cutting the side of the slope, urging his men to move the unburdened pack horses down and then up again at a walk.
The hoofbeats echo well, do they not, Captain?
Very well. Jacques, I think I have a better use for those poor scouts we shot this morning. I need a tent spike out of the baggage. Is there a bellows with the farrier supplies?
No. No bellows. Nor an anvil. But we do have tent spikes.
Monte Cristi got one of his pioneers to retrieve a spike and joined Valentine as the cat and Anka went up to the stand of trees with the dead bodies.
Let's get out of sight. Get a good hot fire going.
Valentine looked at the dead bodies, faces peaceful in death. Rigor mortis would soon alter their attitudes. A couple of the Haitians gathered, looking on with interest. Cercado joined the group. Once the fire had grown, Valentine thrust a tent spike in the center of the fire, and Anka blew through one of the hollow pipes used as a haft for post pikes, handing it to Cercado when he could do no more. The grog's capacious lungs, aided by Cercado, applied enough wind to get the spike hot enough, when held with a piece of leather, hot enough so that when Valentine spat on the point, the spittle jumped off the metal rather than make contact. Sweating from the fire's heat, Valentine crossed over to the bodies and shoved the spike into the eye sockets of each corpse. He was rewarded with the smell of burning flesh. Valentine heard the Haitians mutter to themselves when he, evidently not satisfied with the disfigurement, drew his knife and sliced the ears and lips from each skull. He then ordered Anka to sever the heads with an axe. The marred objects soon sat grinning in the sun. Still not satisfied, Valentine took up the knife and looked at the three heads for inspiration. The frightening thing was how easy all this was. He expected to feel revolted, but something akin to exultation coursed through his veins. He remembered some lines of Nietzsche about how easily man reverted to savagery. Inspired, Valentine knelt and loosened the uniformed culottes.
My David.
If I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this all the way.
He took up the first man's genitals in his fist, drawing them as tightly as he could from the body. He saw through the skin under the scrotal sac, and in a moment held the awful result in his hand. He returned to the head and placed his bloody trophy in the dead, lipless mouth.
Mon Dieu.
One of the Haitians backed away, fingering a crucifix. But Cercado squatted and rubbed his hands in delight.
We can't attack them where they are. This'll do one of two things. Enrage them so they come up after us, or send them running.
Valentine continued his depredations. He finished by putting the three heads in a sack.
Their hour has passed. Will anyone come with me?
Anka and Cercado, followed by a Haitian or two, walked down the hill, again covered by the white flag and blasts of Valentine's whistle. Valentine saw rifles pointed out of loopholes in the sides of the buildings, tracking them. Machine guns in the guard towers pointed ugly flared mouths in their direction, ready to spit fire. Valentine spoke into Cercado's greasy ear.
Far enough! If you seek death, you may come further!
You spoke of heads earlier, my friend. Here, these men served a whisperer, who's now dead on the mountainside. We will come tonight for the rest.
Anka took the sack in his hands. The golden one spun like a hammer thrower and released the sack to fly up and over the wire wall. It landed with a knocking thump before the walls of the armory. The emissaries scattered.
So much for white flags.
The pair took cover behind a hummock of earth. He searched for Anka. The grog lay concealed at the base of a tree.
You fight as they do.
Maybe. Actually, the whole reason I'm doing this is to prevent a fight. But if we have to face them, I want to do it with the advantage.
Only two shots. Why not more?
Why not indeed?
All through the afternoon and evening, Valentine rested and fed his weary men. He watched and waited. The town of San Juan, like most he had seen on Hispaniola through the eyes of his binoculars, was a patchwork of earthquake ruins, banana leaf huts, and surviving architecture. A few women came to the gate bearing baskets, but were turned away without admittance and wandered back down the six-mile trail into town. The Haitians avoided his eyes as he moved among them, disturbed at his treatment of the corpses. Valentine tried to shrug it off as the natural uneasiness of superstitious men who had seen social taboos broken. The bodies had been beyond pain, and as dead as Julius Caesar, whatever animating spirit they possessed was gone. Their souls could be prowling the happy hunting grounds or barking in hell, he would never know. But their corpses might have saved some of the lives of the men now shifting their eyes whenever he looked at them. In a fit of ill mood, Valentine considered presenting Anka's grogs with the bodies as a feast. That would give them something to mutter about, but discarded the idea. With the moon still down and full dark upon the armory, Valentine hit the fence with Anka and the Grogs. They threw hides over the wire, and bodily pulled up the posts of the 9-foot-high fence, tearing away a 20-foot section. The Grogs covered the gap with shotgun and crossbow, and the Haitians poured through. Valentine signaled Anka to let the Grogs start their howling. The Haitians screamed like demons as they crossed the compound and made for the buildings. Not one shot was fired from the walls. The Haitians poured up and over the stone battlements linking the buildings, using loopholes as footholds or boosting each other up by having two men launch the third over. There were a certain amount of mishaps to the attempt on the wall, but without bullets flying, the bumps and falls were comic rather than tragic. Axes and fence post battering rams made short work of the wooden doors once the men made it inside the compound, as Valentine and Anka's Grogs secured the perimeter and main gate, which gaped open. Valentine was glad to see a corral with animals still in it, but judging from the way the gate was left ajar, only lame animals were left by the departing garrison. He heard the main doors to the armory swing wide. Monte Cristi and two panting soldiers bowed elaborately.
The citadel of San Juan is ours, mon capitán. Not a shot fired. Most of the garrison has evacuated. What is left is inside.
Send a few men down the road where they have a good overlook on the trail. But I want them still to be able to see these buildings. Get organized for a quick pullout. I'll blow my whistle, and loud, 3 times if I want us out of here. Is there electricity?
No, just fat lamps.
Be sure no one goes looking in the dynamite shed with one, would you?
Valentine left the gate to Anka and passed the main gate into the compound. The hollow-eyed officer lay there, bound hand and foot, with two of his former subordinates holding onto lines tied to his limbs. An old charwoman sat on a step, smoking cigarettes rolled from newsprint as she watched events. A pair of Haitians clubbed the officer, who had offered an exchange of heads, with their rifle butts.
Stop that!
Another guerrilla squatted before the officer, laughing and taunting the wretch.
Stop that!
Valentine put his hand on his pistol. The men stood and turned and backed away, hiding behind each other like children caught at mischief. One of the erstwhile Santo Domingan soldiers holding a rope spoke.
We join! We join! We fight the capos, you see?
Valentine looked at his new recruits. They had probably been bad soldiers for the Santo Domingans and would be bad soldiers in his cause, but he had to make do with what he had. Valentine tried to put words together in Spanish.
Thank you. Give him freedom.
The Santo Domingans looked at him blankly, either not able to understand why he would want to free an enemy or confused by his Spanish. Valentine drew his knife and took a step toward them. They dropped the traces in alarm. Valentine realized that he was snarling. He knelt by the officer.
My eyes! For the love of God, shoot me! But don't burn out my eyes!
I won't hurt you. You won't be hurt at all. Have you left any surprises? Booby traps?
The man shook his head.
You'll remain among these buildings until we've found out for sure. If you speak the truth, you'll be let go. Do you still say there are no booby traps?
No! No, sir.
Valentine turned to Monte Cristi.
Jacques, put him under guard. Guard, not torture. God, I'm thirsty. Is there a well?
Between the barracks and that house your friend stayed in.
See if you can find any carts, wheelbarrows, anything to begin with. I saw a wagon by the corral. Start there. Then start loading. Medical supplies and machine tools first, then hand tools, then good quality guns, and finally ammunition. Put the best cart you can find outside the walls, but inside the gate. Load any explosives on it. No nitroglycerin, even if you find it. I don't want to mess with that stuff. Dynamite would be best if it hasn't sweated. Nothing heavier than a grenade or a small mortar. We'll use bigger shells and any nitro to bring this place down later. Then we'll start looking for food.
Valentine climbed a ladder to look out over the walls and see Anka, and then moved to the well. After a generous water break, he moved inside the officer's house. He checked the radio first. It was smashed, and there were no notes on the clipboard hanging next to it. He wondered how long Bayen and the other Haitians would be able to keep up their facade of an attack on the border garrisons to the northwest. Even now, the Koreans could be mobilizing. Valentine took up one of the smelly tallow lamps and checked the bedrooms. He decided that three officers shared the quarters. Strange that only one was still present. No wonder the man looked harried and his troops were on edge. Valentine broke open lockers with a crowbar until he found a supply of cigars. He heard someone else investigating the dining room and saw Cercado rooting through a liquor cabinet. Once the road watcher had satisfied himself that nothing alcoholic remained, Valentine asked him for his translation services. He walked out of the house and went to the officer, who was drinking a cup of water brought to him by the charwoman. Valentine offered his prisoner a cigar and a light.
Things are easier between us now that the ugliness is over.
Valentine's words were translated through Cercado. The man looked at Valentine through narrowed eyes.
You have nothing to be ashamed of.
Valentine waited for Cercado to interpret.
With the troubles you've been having on the borders and elsewhere, we knew you would only have a handful of men.
Men? If only. I was left with the stupid and the incompetent. I whose father was at the storming of Manta Plata, left with the imbeciles and cowards.
I understand. It's the same on my side. These Haitians, they look formidable, but they're hardly better than animals. I would trust a horse to have more sense.
Mine forgot what sense they had when they saw the leavings of those scouts.
With your best men away, what could you do?
Yes. First they called up the militia for the assault on the island in Lago Enriquillo. It is time we took it back from the Koreans of Haiti. Some of my under-officers went with them. Then, when your guerrillas started trouble at the border, our capos ordered that every man be scraped up and sent to reinforce the garrisons. Otherwise, you would not be sitting here.
Undoubtedly. The fortunes of war, sir. One moment while I find out if you kept your word about the booby traps. Then you'll see that I keep my word about letting you go. I suppose it's too much to hope that you would join us.
No. In the end, you will be hunted.
We shall see.
He jerked his chin at Cercado and had him follow. Monte Cristi moved about the courtyard, shouting orders to his men. He joined the two.
Not a great bounty, I fear. The tools, yes, but few weapons. Some explosives, some ammunition.
That's disappointing, but it'll mean we can move faster. Can we be out of here by dawn?
Even before. The men are looking for food now, but so far have little that is good for travel.
If that's the worst luck we have on this trip, I'll take it. We can raise some hell behind this Kurian's army on our way out.
Monte Cristi nodded. He looked pale and weary. Valentine was about to tell him to get some rest when a call from the gate brought them to the walls. A runner came in through the gate.
Engine, sir. Coming up the road. Headlights, too.
Three trucks ground up the irregular road from San Juan, judging from the lights.
Anka, get the grogs out of sight.
Then to Monte Cristi.
Hell, we should have had someone put on a uniform. Where have our new recruits gotten to?
Too late to find them now.
Nobody shoot until I do. Nobody shoot.
Valentine got a better look at the trucks. All were variants on the sturdy two-ton military model, the backbone of the world's former armies since the 1940s. So beat up were these that Valentine would have believed they had seen service with Patton's Red Ball Express. Metal panels had been replaced with bamboo and canvas, and instead of headlights, oil lamps hung from the front and sides like a 19th century carriage. Each had a perfect set of off-road tires and spares, however, thanks to the abundant rubber trees on the island. Valentine waved from the walls, hoping that he would just be a silhouette.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Valentine instructed the men now gathering at the walls and main gate.
We'll need these trucks. Let everyone get off. Jacques passed the word. Lower that gun!
He spoke the last to a Haitian who was sighting on the driver's side window, which consisted of corrugated aluminum with a triangular view slit cut into it.
Nobody shoot until I do. Nobody shoot.
The driver of the first truck dismounted, with not a few glances into the passenger cabin. He opened his mouth as if summoning words, before ejaculating in Spanish and throwing himself to the ground, butt in the air and arms crossed over his head. Faces looked up from the beds of the trucks.
I didn't catch that.
Shoot, shoot, it's the Haitians, the fallen driver said.
Monte Cristi raised his pistol.
Wait, don't fire!
A familiar figure swung himself out of the cabin of the first truck. Post planted a boot in the upthrust Dominion's behind.
I told you not to be a hero. Don't tell me I'm late to the party again.
Post looked as exhausted as Monte Cristi, and Valentine was determined to allow everyone a couple hours' sleep in shifts while they loaded the trucks and assorted wagons. Monte Cristi and his men looked after the few animals able to pull a load, while Valentine spoke to Post.
We found the road easily enough, sir. Overgrown, deadfalls everywhere, mudslides, so picking a good ambush spot was simple. We let a ride or two pass before these trucks came running back from the border garrison. Four would have been better, but I figured you'd need either kind soon, so we hit these. It wasn't much of an escort. Some men on horseback. The men went crazy with the machine guns. There wasn't an unwounded horse. I ended up pistoling three. Hated to do it. I don't know what's worse, screaming women or screaming horses. We got the dead and the hurt off the road, bandaged up the wounded as best we could, and the time it took to turn around the trucks and get things organized, and drove down here. I think we got it into third gear once. It was mostly first and second. First in one of these is crawling. Second is a quicker crawl. Only one checkpoint outside San Juan. I don't know if word that we were heading that way got out or what, but it was empty.
Losses or wounded?
None, unless you count dysentery. Some of the men got gut sick from eating the Santo Domingo's rations, I think. Or maybe it was from drinking lamp oil. That kid from Cercado's family, he knew every bend in the road. I'll give him that. You know, we could do worse than to give the road watchers the weapons we find.
Valentine nodded.
We've both been lucky.
From the stories the kid told me, there's a lot of discontent on the island. If some of the peasants here could just get their hands on enough guns and mortars...
That's the first thing I'm going to tell them when we make it back to Mountain Home, my friend. Get some rest. Find a mattress and use it.
Aye, aye, sir.
Post licked his dry lips as he eyed the well. The rest of Valentine's evening, morning, was an excursion into the Curse of Babel. He found himself giving orders to work details in French, English, and Spanish, all of it reinforced with hand gestures and a constant struggle against exploding into profanity. He had to stop men from putting ammunition into weapons meant to be transported, and piling their own weapons in stacks to be carried on the trucks. Groups of men occupied themselves by removing food from one truck and placing it in another, and others, after having made three trips in and out of the armory, decided they had done enough and crawled under the carts and trucks to sleep. Men lit cigars by striking matches on the side of the explosives truck, tossing the matches into the sawdust used to cushion the cases of dynamite. Some of the Thunderbolt's sailors and Marines worked drunkenly, reeling and reeking from Haitian soldier-supplied rum concealed in their canteens, before passing out from dehydration or dropping to their hands and knees to vomit. Valentine caught the Santo Domingan deserters stuffing block after block of chocolate into their mouths and briefly considered making an example of them. In the end, he put them under Anka's supervision, and after they saw their new supervisor pick up a napping grog by his ear, half tearing it off so that the blood ran down the side of the derelict's head, they took to their duties with a will. Valentine tried to comfort himself with the thought that he had been on more disorderly expeditions into the Kurian zone. Somehow, the sun found the armory above San Juan empty, and the trucks and carts loaded. Behind a vanguard of cavalry was Post's battle truck, piled with sandbags and fitted out with the Thunderbolt's machine guns. Then came the other two trucks, towing carts filled with food and water. Behind that were horse-drawn carts and the pack horses, hardly burdened now compared with the loads they had brought over the Cordillero Central. The engines gunned to diesel-fueled life. There was not room for everyone to ride, so the convoy would have to move at the pace of a walking soldier, though the walking men enjoyed the rare treat of moving with only their arms and a small amount of ammunition. Valentine placed himself in the third truck, the one hauling the explosives, with the most experienced driver, one of the chief's mechanics from the Thunderbolt. He was an aging, bald Asiatic, with the pulp western name of Handy Six Guns.
Actually, it's Hardy. And the family's real name is Chin.
Valentine had always known the man as Handy, until he sat in the webbing that served as the passenger seat in the truck cabin. They made conversation while the vehicles inched forward out of the gate.
My father carried four pistols everywhere. He was a wheel gun man, he used to say, just like the old, old cowboy books. Trucker in the old times with a Mobile Birmingham run. Jammed gears for the Kurians, too. I wanted more variety, so I went to sea. Ended up in the Thunderbolt, going from Galveston to the Florida coastline once a month or so.
You know Galveston? I've been there, but never had a chance to get off the ship.
Spent some time there. The old Darcy Arthur got wrecked in a storm, and I was living on the streets there for a while. You grow up fast under them.
Whatever happened to the Elder Six Guns?
I never found out. I went back once when I was in my 20s. The house was just deserted. No note, no nothing. The neighbors couldn't or wouldn't tell me anything. Funny I still look for his face everywhere I go. Bad not knowing.
Worse than knowing the worst? Valentine wondered. At least Six Guns could imagine a future for his father. Valentine had the sorrowful memory of a crow pecking at the hole in the back of his father's skull, his dead siblings, his mother's violated corpse. A long mile down the road, the convoy halted. Post and two sailors trotted down the road from the fort, where wisps of smoke could already be seen coming from the armory.
When it hits that black powder...
Post trotted up to Valentine's truck.
We probably have another 30 minutes, sir. I didn't want us to get caught in the explosion.
Release the prisoner. Not much he can do about it now.
Post nodded and went over to the two Haitians escorting the captured officer. They cut the corded knots around his wrists and ankles. The officer looked back at his post, ashen-faced. Valentine climbed down from his truck.
We're looking for good men, sir.
Emotion gave him the eloquence in Spanish to get through the semi-rehearsed speech.
I once served the Kurians, too. But now I'm with those who resist. It's not a lost cause or a sure death.
The part about serving the Kurians was not strictly true, Valentine acknowledged to himself, but he thought it might help the man.
No, they have my oath. They have my sister in Santo Domingo. All I need from you is a pistol with one bullet.
That's not the way.
Suddenly, the man lunged at him. Valentine sidestepped, stuck out a foot and a hand. And the officer went sprawling to the dirt. A Haitian raised his gun.
No! Bind him again. He's coming with us. I'm sorry. I won't have you hurting yourself.
When they thought they were out of Valentine's hearing, some of the Haitians grumbled that a prisoner would ride while they would walk. Valentine shrugged it off. Soldiers that didn't grumble were thinking about something else, like their fears. The trucks rattled into gear, and the men got to their feet, and the column was on its way. The first stragglers appeared as they crossed a bridge south of San Juan. There had been some kind of skirmish at the bridge. Monte Cristi's horsemen lit out after a few sentries who took shots at the column. After Post determined that it was safe to cross, Valentine ordered the men out of combat positions and back into the march order. Valentine walked with the rear guard as the column headed south. He had heard riders somewhere to the east and was not sure if they were some of Monte Cristi's scouts or a Santo Domingans. He saw six or seven ragged people, bundles over their shoulders or in woven baskets, following behind. He found one of Monte Cristi's sub-chiefs.
Who are they?
The man shrugged.
Don't know. They attach themselves outside San Juan. There are two or three more now.
Let me know if they try to catch up. I don't want one of them throwing a grenade into the explosives truck.
Monte Cristi joined him at the rear of the column.
We ran into some soldiers from one of the Shoya plantations. The riders treat one of them.
Did they tell him the story and let him go?
Oui, mon capitaine. He is running even now with the story that we are marching on Santo Domingo, but implying that we are stronger than we are.
We've got to play the role of... This reminds me of a lizard. I can't remember what it's called, but I know it lives in Australia. When it's threatened, these flaps of skin open like an umbrella, and it opens its mouth and charges on its hind legs. It couldn't hurt anything larger than a bug if it tried. The appearance of aggression makes a predator think twice. A frilled lizard, that's what it's called. We gotta look like we're charging, and we're really getting set to run.
You are a man of strange interests.
After I was orphaned, a teacher raised me. I lived in his library. You were speaking of the militia. Where were the soldiers from?
The sugar plantation. From what I hear, it's a big one. It is on this road ahead. We will reach it soon.
Good. I've heard of these plantations. I'd like to see one.
Valentine had seen many work camps in his years traveling in the Kurian zone. Yet the worst the KZ offered in the lands familiar to him was only a shadow of what he found on the riverbank of the Yacht del Sur. In the north, Kurian cruelty adhered to a certain logic. When it was time to kill, the Reapers usually performed the task in the dark of night, away from human eyes. Only certain auras were taken, and none wasted if possible, for infusions of vital aura were too valuable to whatever band of Kurians were in charge. Perhaps this green valley was only loosely controlled, or perhaps the island's people were fecund enough for auras to be in oversupply. Whatever the reason, death worked overtime in this part of Santo Domingo. Dead, leaf-stripped palm trees along the road presented the first horrors. Valentine saw bodies, some nothing but rotting corpses beneath a mask of flies tied to the trunks. Above the tormented figures, bleached skulls were tucked into nests of pepper trees, threaded onto smaller branches. On some, the branches had grown through or around the skulls, swallowing them behind bark and bursting them asunder. Valentine locked eyes with one victim still alive, atop a magnificent body bleeding at the tight bonds around his chest. The man was crying, but had exhausted his tears. Flies clustered at the raw sores where the rope cut into him. Crows and vultures feasted on what was left of the man just to the left of him, and the one to the right had fallen apart, only the upper half of the skeletal structure remaining attached to the tree. To their credit, the Haitians did not wait for orders. The truck stopped, and men left their places in the column and rushed, knives in hand, to cut those still living free.
Get out of here!
Valentine kicked a bloated vulture out of the way and walked up the turnoff leading to the station. The vulture paused in the shade of a white-painted sign reading, Azuca Erdvargas. The Spanish word for sugar was peeling, but beneath the stenciled letters of Vargas's name were several layers of old primer. Valentine looked down the cane-flanked lane. A cluster of wooden buildings stood between two sets of high bamboo fence at the end of an unshaded gravel road. Valentine guessed them to be separate housing for the men and women of the plantation. Sugarcane stretched out to either side of the road, which was built up high enough to give a commanding view of the fields for miles. Cast aside at the gates of the establishment, like litter thrown along a highway, were more corpses, long since rotted into a jumble of bones. Valentine saw a rat scuttle for cover among the bones.
My David?
Anka appeared at his arm, showing his uncanny sense of knowing when he was wanted.
I see a truck back there. Get your grogs together and post with his marines. Take whatever we need, animals, weapons, the truck if it'll move, and some sugar. We're gonna burn this place to the ground. Anyone carrying a gun or whip, you shoot.
Valentine turned on his heel and went to Post's battle truck. Post was helping carry one of the plantation hands to shade.
Will, we're gonna burn this place.
He thought briefly of Duvalier and her various tales of arson in the KZ. She had been right. There were atrocities that only burning would cleanse. This was one of them.
I want it to look like it was never here, just a bare spot on the ground. Understand?
Post pressed a canteen into the hands of the newly freed man. He stood, jaw set, stinking blood and pus from the peon spattered on his shirt front.
Yes, sir.
Sailors and Marines readied their weapons. Valentine chambered a round in his PPD and hopped up on the front bumper, holding on to the German logo on the grillwork. The driver revved the engine and turned from the line of torture palms to the station road. The truck roared down the lane, fast enough to kick up dust. A figure or two appeared in the doorway of the main building, rifles in their hands. The principal building of the plantation was a two-story brick house encircled by a wide shaded veranda. Post loosed a burst from a machine gun and the men ran. Sharp rifle cracks brought them down, the fall of their bodies kicking up puffs of dust from the gravel surrounding the main house. The truck braked before the house. Valentine released his grip, letting the final momentum of the aged Benz throw him forward. Valentine followed his gun barrel through the double doors. A man in a uniform similar to the ones he saw at San Juan stood at a glassless window, gaping at the men dismounting from the truck. He threw his hands forward, palms out, as if hoping to halt the men by body language. Valentine cut him down with a burst from the PPD. The old, awful thrill ran through his body as he smelled the gun smoke and the man's blood. Valentine walked into the kitchen and looked out the open back door. A woman in white rags ran, carrying a baby in her arms, a naked boy alongside her. He ignored her. He passed through an empty dining room and into an office. An electric fan whirred atop a paper-strewn desk. One window was shuttered, and the other window stood open. Valentine looked around. A smashed gun cabinet showed an empty bracket between two shotguns. Whoever occupied the office hadn't had time to get the key. Or to get his footwear, Valentine noted, seeing a set of high military-style boots by the door. Valentine moved away from the window, not wanting to give a rifleman an easy target. He returned to the front veranda. Post had the Thunderbolts Marines backing up the Grogs as they stormed the barracks. The Haitians were at the gates of the worker compounds, breaking bamboo posts with crowbars and axes. The Thunderbolts men stayed at the battle truck, training their weapons on the unoccupied buildings. A rifle or two popped from the cane fields, but wherever the shots were aimed, they caused no damage.
See if there are any animals in the stables.
The sight of uniformed bodies lying here and there turned Valentine's bloodlust into revulsion. At the Kurian system. At himself. An hour later, the plantation was in flames, and Valentine had almost 100 more charges. Before burning it, he had turned over the contents of the station house, barracks, and storerooms to them so they could carry off what they would. The problem was that they carried it off in the trail of his convoy. By the time they camped, still on the banks of the river flowing out of the mountains of the Cordillera Central, Valentine guessed those following his trucks, wagons, and animals to number in the hundreds. Some of the refugees drove pigs and goats or pulled donkeys along, with children or the aged perched on blanketed backs. He found Cercado warming some beans and rice on the battle truck's radiator.
A good day.
We picked up a lot of stragglers, though.
Who would blame them?
Please go among them. Find out what their plans are. Tell them we're marching toward battle, and we need young men who would use machetes or guns.
You can't be serious, Captain. I doubt if one among them knows one end of a rifle from another. It'd be safer using it as a club.
Perhaps. If this keeps going on, by the time we get to Puerto Viejo, we'll have thousands of men. It would be...
unfortunate.
Agreed. Go among them. Talk to them. See what they plan to do.
That I can tell you already. They want to get away.
Let them know that's not an option. If they want to be free of the Kurians, they'll have to do it themselves. I'm not Moses. I can't bring the multitudes out of Egypt.